Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is Joe Bigos, the writer and director of a new sci-fi horror thriller called The Mind's Eye. Now, this movie made its world premiere at the 2015 Toronto International Film Festival, and Joe also won Best Director Horror Feature at the 2015 Fantastic Fest. Welcome to the show, Joe.
How's it going?
Not too bad. This movie, I have to ask, what was the inspiration for this? Because it's a little bit of horror, but a lot of sci-fi wrapped in a interesting new package for me anyway.
Yeah, I think it just came from the fact that there wasn't a lot of Kelly's movies whatsoever coming out, and that was something that really appealed to me. And I just don't like making movies like that's a copy of what the current trend is. I mean, you know, you get fucking 20 of the same is coming out every 6 months that are like, you know, interchangeable with their names and posters, and I hate that. So I'd rather be, you know, influenced by like, it's really amphetamine. Don't we see that much anymore? We just see Charlie Mason movies, and we see stuff like X-Men and Chronicle, but that's not like, that's cool, but it's not what appeals to me. You know, I wanted to see a really gory, down and dirty horror version of that, of a Spinner's movie.
Cool. Well, yeah, to let listeners know, this The Mind's Eye is about, primarily about two people with psychokinetic, telekinetic abilities who fall prey to a scientist, researcher with some pretty devious, dark, ulterior motives. And I have to applaud you on giving us a villain who, shall we say, relishes achieving his goals.
Yeah, he's awesome. He just he chews up scenery and doesn't look back.
I applaud a good scene chewing villain, one who doesn't hold back. I mean, this one for me, the actor's John Spyridakos, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be like a great Freddy Krueger.
He could with the prosthetics that were on him, but I haven't seen scenery chewed with such visceral glee since Jeremy Irons in that awful Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Oh, yeah. I think that he would like that comparison to Jeremy for sure.
Now, the story I found interesting because it reminded me a little bit more of The Fury by De Palma than it did Scanners. Everybody, I'm sure, is going to compare it to Scanners just because of the number of skulls exploding, but I got more of a feel of The Fury from it. Was that intentional?
Yeah, and actually, you're one of the only people to bring that up. It definitely was the more influential of the two, especially with like, the Institute. You know, you got the guy with the eye patch, and man, I really wanted to do something along the lines of that body explosion at the end of The Fury, you know, because Scanners is a head explosion, Fury has the body explosion. Mm-hmm. So I figured, why not have both and more? So I really do like The Fury. I think that The Fury has some really awesome moments. It's overall kind of clunky. I feel the same way about Scanners, but I feel like together, like, there's a really cool movie if you were to combine both of those movies, because they're sort of the same plot line, but not really. But yeah, they both definitely get some positives and some negatives.
They do. I wish The Fury had aged better. It just appeared back on Netflix, and I had to watch it. And I really wish it had aged better, but. And then this, The Mind's Eye comes along. I'm like, okay, it's sort of The Fury updated. I like this.
Yeah.
What was your approach towards filming this? Why wintertime?
I actually really wanted to shoot it in October in New England because my last movie, Almost Human, was shot in the winter. But we just had some financial issues, so we had to delay shooting. And ended up being in February, and I was a little worried because I didn't want it to look too much like Almost Human, but then we got this massive snowfall about a week before shooting, and like that made it look so different. But then I was really nervous that it was going to look too, like, you know, I was really nervous actually that it was, the snow was going to melt, and then it was going to look too ridiculous that someone would get snow and someone didn't. You could all fix this over one day, and we were shooting for 7 weeks, but thankfully it just kept snowing and snowing and snowing. So we had it there the whole time, and it also became a gigantic pain in the ass to shoot in it, but it looks fucking awesome. So I'm glad, you know, there's not a lot of snow set television movies, so I got that going for me.
And I was hoping to see a scene where the you'd see like an avalanche caused by telekinesis, but I guess that would have been special effects used not efficiently, but still.
Yeah, maybe for the sequel.
Oh, there you go. I don't want to get too much into spoilers because I did enjoy this movie, and I will say that it seems like Rachel might have a touch of PTSD after her experience, and seeing how she deals with that while she has these abilities could be interesting.
Yes, it also could be interesting what's brewing inside of her, what sort of super telekinetic stew is brewing inside of her. If you know what I mean.
I really don't want to spoil it, but, you know, spoilers. Is she pregnant?
Possibly.
Okay. we'll just wait for the sequel, and I do hope you get to do one. Now, did you have to change anything from your original story for shooting because of basically the time of the year or locations that you could or couldn't use?
Nothing changed because of the season change, but, you know, the location things, we had to just switch a little bit of stuff around, but ultimately we got pretty close to what I had written, so I'm happy with that. It's pretty close to what was on the page for sure.
For me, seeing how dark some of the scenes were, you know, shot in the middle of the night, it added a level of claustrophobia to what the paranormal subjects were going through, and I thought that was an interesting and well done choice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it kind of came from a budgetary standpoint, but it also worked from the scope of the movie, so I'm glad.
Now, what other aspects did you focus on? Because with this movie has a lot of practical effects with the exploding heads and the floating weapons and Dr. Slovak's, I'm going to say, transformation?
Yeah. Metamorphosis, I guess you can say. I worked with Spears, and I thought that in the script, this goes through three stages. Stage one, stage two, stage three. So we kind of decided at what point those were going to enter the story. And our makeup expert, Brian, had started doing tests actually on a 9-year-old niece. So I had all these mock-up pictures of Dr. Slovak's makeup on his 9-year-old niece. And it looks really cool.
That sounds interesting. Now, were there any elements in the story that you had written that you had to leave out because of just time or budget?
No, I wrote the script knowing that it was going to be a fairly low-budget affair, so I was able to kind of track all that while I was writing the script and figuring that out. And then because of the experiences in Almost Human, because I just know how long a lot of this stuff takes, we had a purposely long shooting schedule of 37 main unit days. So we were actually able to pull up all of the effects in the script and even add a couple of little flourishes here or there. But everything that was in the script effects-wise is there in the movie, which I was very adamant about happening. But, of course, I didn't think would actually happen. So that's just a major testament to the crew and the makeup effects guys who fucking killed it, obviously.
Yeah, that's a little bit long for a low-budget shoot, so nicely done.
Yeah, everybody calls me crazy, but I mean, you know, movies, a lot of other movies with this budget are shooting for 14 days, you know, and don't have any fucking effects. So I don't know where they're spending their money, but it's in the wrong goddamn places.
Aside from Rachel's potential condition going forward. I was surprised to find out about Zach's father. If there is a sequel, would there be some sort of exploration of older psychokinetics that people didn't know about?
Maybe, you know, and then there's the talk about them having to go to, like, Philadelphia to track down another one. Mm-hmm. So I guess I think that there's a cool little world to explore there, for sure. So, possibly.
If you didn't get to do a sequel, would you consider expanding somewhere like, say, graphic novels?
Possibly. You know, we'll see how this one does and then go from there. I hope I can do something.
I hope so, too, because it's a fascinating world, an interesting first look. And if I remember correctly, this movie actually starts in 1990, so you've got a lot of room on either side to play with.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that there could be a very cool visual aspect to that whole scenario as well.
There you go, web series.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. So what else are you working on, or do you have anything planned for your next project yet?
I've written a couple scripts. I'm just trying to see what I can finance next. You know, I wrote a satanic summer camp slash movie. I hope I can get going. I wrote a really, really action-packed body horror time travel movie with my buddy Mickey Keaton. I'm just going to keep on writing until somebody lets me go direct another movie.
Oh, I'm a fan of time travel films, so let us know if that ever happens.
Yeah, I mean, how many grisly, grainy-ass, gory time travel movies can you think of to come out in the last 20 years? So I think it's time.
Yeah, not bad, not bad at all. Well, thank you for your time today, Joe.
All right, no problem.
That's Joe Bigos, the writer and director of The Mind's Eye, coming out August 5th in theaters and on video on demand. Check it out. It's a cute little, well, if you like a lot of heads exploding, definitely cute. But I think it's a very tightly told story and very enjoyable for me anyway.
Cool. Thank you, man.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Straight on to the morning. Yeah, yeah. Sea, unlock the secrets of time. We might never return. The legacy of mankind. Yeah, yeah.
Second star to the right.
Set a course.
Straight on till the morning.
Straight on till the morning.
Second star to the right.
So yes, when The Mind's Eye becomes available, go check it out. It's pretty good. It's not as throwback awesome as Dark Was the Night, but it still has a lot of high points. Like I said, the antagonist, the rogue scientist, well, let's just say it outright. He's a mad scientist, plain and simple. The scenery chewing that he does as he's gaining powers from siphoning him off from his test subjects and losing his mind at the same time, he just becomes more and more unhinged. And yes, I truly believe that scenery chewing is at the same level that Jeremy Irons hit when he was doing Dungeons and Dragons. Because Jeremy Irons' scenes are the only watchable parts of that movie. I dare anybody to beg to differ. There's nothing redeemable about Dungeons and Dragons other than Jeremy Irons' completely so far over the top he's in orbit performance. We have more and more articles, essays, music even, paying homage to Star Trek. The track that was played in the break is a new single from Cyfried called A Tall Ship. The video for it and the single will be available, I believe, July 31st, late in the evening sometime. But you get a sneak listen to it here. All of the guys are big fans of Star Trek. It's safe to say that without Star Trek, those guys wouldn't have come together to become a band. And they are very appreciative of that, very aware of how big an impact Star Trek has had on their lives. And we'll get a few more essays from the members of the band as we go along through the rest of August and September, as well as essays from current and even some former Slice of Sci-Fi contributors lurking about in the woodworks. But right now we have to segue from Star Trek to Babylon 5. Jerry Doyle, who played Mr. Garibaldi, passed away this week. And what shocked me was he was only 60. Tim and I were talking about this. That's not too much older than we are. Him dying that young. It's a shock. I don't know any details yet. I don't know if they've released any real details yet. I've been trying to wrap my head around it. I'm like, wait, what? Because in Babylon 5, the two characters I most identified with were Marcus Cole and Michael Garibaldi. I don't know, something of a connection with other lost souls trying to find their way in the universe, doing the best they can, not always succeeding, but continuing to try. Yeah, I can relate to that a lot. And what makes it even more shocking to me, I had just started rewatching Babylon 5. I put the DVDs for season 1 in there last weekend. Started going through the episodes again, just sitting back and just remembering how much that show means to me. Still means to me, even after all these years. The fact that Michael Garibaldi's character, his patron saint was Daffy Duck, and my hero growing up was Bugs Bunny. Yeah, I can relate. And if I recall correctly, when Tim and I interviewed Jerry a while back now for the Babylon podcast, he said there was a lot of Garibaldi that came from the real him, the real Jerry Doyle. JMS wrote something in memory of Jerry. It's over on b5books.com. We'll have the link to it on the website, but my sentiments are pretty much well summed up by his, because I still have not been able to wrap my head around this and write something for him, but I will. Oh, well. In any case, that'll do it for this episode. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Leave a voice message, ask a question, or if you want to record a longer message, go ahead and email that to summer@sliceofscifi.com. If you listen to the show through iTunes, feel free to leave us a review or a rating over there. I believe you can also leave reviews over at Stitcher. You can also listen to us on TuneIn and on Krypton Radio. Check us out on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Google+, Slice of Sci-Fi, and on YouTube, Slice of Sci-Fi over there. We have the websites, sliceofscifi.com, writersafterdark.com, kickassmysticninjas.com, and popculturegeeks.com. Thank you everyone who's continuing to donate to the show through either PayPal or Patreon. The Patreon users, it's easier to get you your free bonus stuff if you're using Patreon. So keep that in mind if you want to start donating but haven't yet. The URL to go to is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. You can pledge as little as a dollar a month. And honestly, every dollar helps. You guys are helping to keep the show active and alive. The website hosting, the media hosting, and that media hosting includes audio and video. Yes, the Slice of Sci-Fi TV podcast is still going. You can download the videos that Noah and Darren are recording for certain movies. Yes, they're the same ones that are on YouTube, but now you can take them with you and watch. We hope to get some excerpts from conventions, and we're open to accepting video submissions from other people attending other conventions around the country and around the world. So keep that in mind next time you're at a sci-fi con and go, hey, this would be cool to showcase on Slice of Sci-Fi. Thank you all for your continued support, either through donations, pledges, or just submitting content. Just even visiting the website helps. So thank you very much for all of that. Also, Sci-Fried, my favorite geek band, you know that already. The guys are submitting their own Star Trek Memories essays. They will be on the website as soon as every time one comes in, it'll go up on the website. The single that you heard here, A Tall Ship, should be available next week, this coming week. The video for it will be on YouTube. I believe you'll have ways to get the single as well. It's their tribute to the 50 years of Star Trek ongoing celebration that's started months ago and continues through the big convention in September. If you want to hear other music by Sci-Fried, including their recent Go Pokemon Go, head on over to their website, sci-fried.com. Tell them Slice of Sci-Fi is where you heard them and you want to hear more. They should be having more singles coming over the next few months, as well as some live shows. So keep an eye on their website. If they're coming to a venue near you, definitely check them out. But that will do it. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.